attitude. We are going to energise the country.
Stop Brexit.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Seamus, I'm not sure this is a great idea.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by the Liberal Democrats' prospective parliamentary candidate for Witney, Charlotte Hoagland. Welcome to the podcast, Charlotte.
Well, thank you, Will, for having me. It's a great honour.
thank you. It's a great honour to have you on. Firstly, I'd like to ask, the seat that you're standing in, Witney, has been held by the Conservatives for more or less since its creation in 1983. How confident are you of winning the seat for the Liberal Democrats?
Well, I'm very confident because, this is a Remain constituency, but the current MP, or he was an MP until obviously the dissolution of Parliament, he is an extreme Brexiteer, ERG, European Research Group. He voted to leave, and therefore he's not representing this constituency that voted to remain.
Now, there has been some recent talk on the Liberal Democrats' position. I think it was yesterday or the day before, Lily Moran, who is standing in a constituency not that far from your own, said that it might be better for the Liberal Democrats to focus on a second referendum rather than the position the party has been espousing recently of simply revoking Article 50. Which do you think would be a better position to focus on, a referendum or just direct revoking of Article 50?
Well, I agree with Leila Moran. I think really we need to put it back to the people. We should have a people's vote. Instead of having this general election, we should have been having a people's vote.
Do you think that then perhaps the fact that there has been some sort of like speculation over whether the Liberal Democrats should be a revoke party or whether they should be a party of a referendum has perhaps muddied the waters in terms of where the general public feel that the Liberal Democrats are going in their reaction to Brexit?
It probably has muddled the waters a bit, and I think that's unfortunate. Because when Jo said revoke Article 50, I think that was on the assumption that she was going to be the prime minister of this country. And while that would be wonderful, I think now she's sort of realized that she's not going to be the prime minister of this country. But even in the opposition, what I think we can do if we have a sort of progressive Remain alliance, that we can get enough votes through the House of Commons to have another referendum.
And the Remain Alliance has been something that the Liberal Democrats and other parties that support Remain have been pushing for a while. Do you think that it's been detrimental that the Labour Party hasn't joined that alliance?
I do. I think it's very unfortunate. I mean, even here locally, we reached out to the Labour Party. I know members of my party did. And, to try to figure out some way we could work together, and they just would have none of it. And it's unfortunate because there are other seats around the country where we have been playing a more laid-back approach, been more of a paper candidate in some seats, knowing that Labour probably has a better chance. And it's really unfortunate that in Witney that Labour hasn't done the same thing for us.
Do you think that when the Labour Party say that, oh, they can be the party of both Remain and Leave by advocating for another referendum, but also going back and renegotiating their own deal if they were to form the government. Do you think that in some ways makes the public confused about the whole cause of Remain? Because the Labour Party is saying, oh, well, we want to have a referendum and put it back to the people, but at the same time we want to renegotiate a new deal with Europe, and then of course the Liberal Democrats has the confusion over whether to revoke directly or to have a referendum. Do you think that a lack of sort of a consistent agreed line from the parties that support Remain or say that they support Remain is making it more difficult to get your message over in comparison to the perhaps simpler message that Boris Johnson has of just passing his deal and getting on with Brexit?
Yes, I agree. I do think it's sort of complicated the waters. It's been very clear from day one that Jeremy Corbyn is on the fence, and I don't think he has been a very good leader of the opposition. He hasn't challenged the government nearly as much as he should have been doing. And it's clear that, you know, he represents more of a Leave campaign than a Remain campaign. And I think it's very unfair to the population in his constituency, as well as in other Labour seats, who did vote to Remain. I think they're playing a very silly game. And this is not a game. This is real life. People's lives are affected. This is we currently have frictionless borders, which is tremendous. And I don't know why anyone would want to have friction at our borders. You know, it will affect so many of our imports and our exports. It's crazy. And I really think it's good that the Liberal Democrats have been clear. Now, I think we should have been consistent about the people's vote, which, you know, we have been at every people's vote rally. I did disagree with Joe about the revoke Article 50, but the position is still clear that the Liberal Democrats are the main party to stop Brexit, and we will do that by a people's vote.
Mm. And you mentioned earlier that at the start of the campaign, Jo Swinson said that she would be the Liberal Democrats' candidate to be Prime Minister. I mean, recently there's been a article in the Mirror where a old article of Boris Johnson's was produced, in which he said pretty offensive things about working class people, and said that single mothers were somehow irresponsible. And also today we've seen reports for an old video of Jeremy Corbyn saying that he believed that the BBC was biased in favour of the existence of Israel, with leaders for both the Conservatives and Labour who have got such baggage, such negative pasts. Why do you think the Liberal Democrats have not broken through as much as you would have hoped to have done at the start of the campaign?
Now, that's a very good question. And you're absolutely right. I've seen those articles and pieces from each leader of the opposition, the Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson. And I think they're horrific. I really think they say things, you know, at the spur of the moment, that they don't think these things through. And I really find it offensive what they're saying. They're, you know, they have no right to say some of this stuff. And it is very disappointing that the Liberal Democrats haven't been able to get more traction. And part of that is because we don't have proportional representation. This first past the post is ridiculous. It doesn't help smaller or third parties succeed. It's the reason why there's only one Green Party MP. And again, you know, I'm very fortunate in Whitney that the Green Party has decided to stand aside and work with my party to try to help me get elected. And, you know, I obviously want to see proportional representation so that we can get more Liberal Democrats and Green Party members in the House of Commons.
Do you think that the reason that perhaps we don't have proportional representation in this country is that when each of the two main parties, either Labour or the Conservatives, have been in power, that there's been a sense that, oh, well, this would harm us, therefore we're not going to introduce it? And do you think that that in some way is an unfair balancing against the smaller parties like the Liberal Democrats and the Greens?
Yes, I do. I think they are the main ones that benefit by not having proportional representation. And it's very unfortunate that they wouldn't be more open to having opposition. But again, when you're in government, you don't really want to have that much opposition. Mm. But in a true democracy, you need to have real opposition.
Now, I know in the previous general election, you were involved in, you were the campaign manager for Jamie Stone's election in Caithness, Sutherland and East... Easter Ross. I just wanted to make sure I didn't pronounce it incorrectly.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
I wondered, how is it different working on a campaign like that where you're not the candidate, as opposed to being the candidate? What sort of were the main differences that you've seen comparing these two experiences?
Well, they've both been tremendous experiences, and I'm very grateful and honored to have been ha to have had both roles that I, did for working for Jamie Stone, which was great, and it was really nice. He happened to be a family friend, so I know him pretty well. But again, you're right, there are differences, kind of being more in the kind of when you're managing a campaign than when you are the candidate. And in a way, I think because of my past experience working for the party in different capacities, I kind of, grew into the role of being the candidate. So having done managerial role, having done research, all that elements of the campaign, I'm glad that I've been in the different roles that I'm now delegating people for. And two, because it's something, I can say to them, anything that I'm asking you to do, I have done myself. So it's very humbling that I can say to people, look, I've done that, and here's some tips. So in a way, there are some similarities that I can sort of give advice as well as take advice from others. I suppose in a way, when you are the candidate, again, you are part of the brand of the political party, and I'm very proud to wear that brand. The Liberal Democrats, I've been a consistent member for many, many decades now, at least 2 decades. I suppose you learn a lot about just being more front and center, and again, being like a spokesman for a brand when you're the candidate. So there, unless you've sort of, unless again, unless you know the candidate in previous elections really well, it's hard to know what it's like. And again, no campaign that I've ever worked on is the same. So I've definitely taken bits from all my campaigns and kind of put them together in a collage. So, I'm very grateful to the party for putting their confidence in me. And it's a great opportunity for me to stand up for people.
What do you think are the main differences? Because obviously, the constituency you're working with, James Stone, is in Scotland, and Whitney's in
Yep.
Oxford.
Well, they're both pretty spread out, I'll be honest. There are actually probably a lot of similarities, which may or may not be surprising, if I can answer that first. In the sense that the geography of Caithness Hull and Easter Ross is obviously quite large, and it does require a lot of driving. But then again, so does Whitney, in West Oxfordshire. One doesn't think about that, but they're from getting, from Whitney to Tackley, it takes a good half an hour at least. So the distance is quite large. In Whitney, and you have a lot of different villages. Whereas I think in the Highlands, it was a little bit more central. You've got big cities and towns like Wick and Thurso that are a little bit more condensed than in Whitney. So I think that's something that but again, there are still the struggles with public transport. There are still the struggles with the health and social care. And you, one wouldn't have thought, given how close we are, one to Oxford and two to London, that one would see these problems as well as so. For instance, in Caithness, if you are a new mother, you have to drive down 2.5 hours to Inverness to deliver your child. Now, there in Whitney, there is the maternity ward, but if anything sort of goes wrong, and you are encouraged more to go to the JR. Or if you have a doctor in London, obviously, you can go to London. But it's just interesting that being one, further south and closer to a bigger city, I wouldn't have thought that we would have had these problems. And it makes me realize that clearly around the country, we are struggling to address our NHS needs, our public transport needs. And it surprises me that whether it's the SNP in Caithness or the Conservatives in Whitney, that they don't seem to address really these concerns of public transport and improving that so that we can be more connected. I mean, it is incredible how in the Bartons, when they lost a stagecoach bus, that the community came together and created a community bus. I think that community spirit is phenomenal, but again, it still needs funding. And in Whitney, the Conservative candidate is consistently saying, oh, we're going to expand the motorway, and which you've got a very congested motorway and a very congested A40 road here. expanding that is going to add more congestion. I and the Liberal Democrats would much rather see electric rail, electric vehicles, and why not have a light rail from Whitney to Oxford to get more cars off, and also making sure that those communities that don't have bus service are connected. Because if you're not connected, it will just increase loneliness and a lot of other negative aspects. And I think it's very unfortunate. But anyway, those are things that I found interesting, that there would be similarities from places that are very geographically separated. but yet at the same time have share a lot of similar concerns and problems.
Was it quite surprising to see some of the problems in Whitney, given that until relatively recently it was the seat of the Prime Minister? Was this something that shocked you quite a great deal?
A little bit, to be honest. When people said to me that there's homelessness, that we have more food banks popping up, I'm glad in a way that we are being able to provide food for the homeless. And those who can't afford it. But again, it did surprise me, because here's a very conservative area that is not looking after all of society. And I think it's very, very unfortunate that we're not looking after citizens better. We really should be. And as you pointed out, okay, yes, he was the Prime Minister, and yes, he will have had plenty of international responsibilities. But at the end of the day, he was also still an MP. And from what I gather, he was better than the previous or the current Robert Kurz. That doesn't really say very much. But you're right. I think giving priority to your constituents and the constituency is very important, and they should have done more. We really, in this day and age, we shouldn't be having so many food banks and soup kitchens. Although, as I said, I'm glad we have the resources to provide for people who can't afford food. But for a first world country, we really do need to be tackling this and taking it more seriously.
How do you respond when some people, because of course the Liberal Democrats from 2010 to 2015 were in coalition with the Conservatives, some people were perhaps level with you, saying that, oh, well, the Liberal Democrats were as equally responsible as the Conservatives for, supporting them, increasing poverty and all these sorts of things. How do you respond when people suggest things like that to you?
Well, that's another good question. And yes, to be fair, it was a very difficult decision to go for many of the Liberal Democrat MPs to go into the coalition. What unfortunately bothers me is that we don't talk up about some of the stuff that we really did very well in coalition, and some of the stuff that we sort of held the Conservatives, we tried to hold them back in a way. And again, we made some mistakes in coalition. I'm very sure that we will not make the same mistakes again. Joe has been very clear that we will not go into coalition with the Tories again or with Labour. And what I say to that is, I think it would be very good to have a Remain alliance. So if there are Remain MPs, be they Tory or Labour, I think that as a progressive alliance in Parliament, as an opposition, would be very strong.
Do you think then that perhaps maybe not winning and forming the government should not be the Liberal Democrats' aim, of course, stated aim, but do you think that more emphasis should be put on working with those MPs who are supportive of the Remain cause to ensure that if there is a hung parliament, you would be able to form some form of government and get rid of the Conservatives that way? Do you think that that would be a better method of ensuring that Brexit doesn't happen?
Sort of like a progressive alliance government. Remain. Yeah, no, I think that would be a very good idea. And again, a lot of it does go back to looking at where various parties have either stepped aside or decided that they're not going to run because, another Remain candidate has a better chance. And I mean, I think a lot of those negotiations were going on, but then the election was called and it was sort of like, okay, foot on the brake, we have to make a very quick decision. Are you standing? Or, you know, and I think that's unfortunate because those relationships do take time to develop. And again, I'm very grateful to the Green Party in Whitney because I know how long those relationship discussions were going on for. And I'm very grateful that, and I've explained to them that I'm very happy to work with them if we get into Parliament. So I yes, I think it would be much better to have a more progressive alliance remain government than a Boris Johnson government.
Do you think that if there was a chance that the Labour Party said that, we will have the referendum and we will ensure that that gets passed as soon as possible, but you know, we've not got a majority, but we've got a larger amount of seats than the Conservatives. Do you think that in that situation, perhaps not going into government, but do you think in that situation, then the Liberal Democrats should support the Labour Party in ensuring that that gets passed through Parliament and that we do have a second referendum?
Well, I think it's very important that we have a second referendum, and I do think that we will. The number of MPs that will go into Parliament in this next government, in the next Parliament season, will be more Remain MPs. And I think they will be able to carry through a people's vote referendum.
I'd just like to briefly move on to something else. I know that around about the early years of the Obama administration, you were working in Washington. I just wondered that, as we have the current president under indictment proceedings at the moment, how you feel looking back on that time of the early years of the Obama administration. Do you think that we will be able to see a future president who has, you know, similar aspirations and similar hopes again in the United States?
Again, very good question. Yes, I remember my time fondly when I was working for the House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer. I was lucky enough to actually go to the inauguration of Barack Obama. And the spirit, the amount of peace and happiness and hope that I still remember when I was at the, you know, at the inauguration, everyone felt really optimistic and hopeful that we could have some new energy, new, you know, because here was a fresh face, someone, you know, who hadn't really been around in sort of the traditional political groupings, as they say, or families, historical families. And I think it was really, he really gave people that sense of, you know, we can do this. And I do think that it was very tough for him. He had a very tough presidency, certainly when the Democrats lost the House of Representatives. I think the current president of the United States is a complete buffoon. and I mean, he shares a lot of traits with Boris Johnson. And I do think that the U.S. will come back from this. I think we will elect a new president, hopefully in the next election. I know that former mayor Bloomberg has put his name into the race, and I think he seems like a very genuine individual. I hope he doesn't split the Democratic vote the way that Bernie Sanders did with Hillary Clinton. But, you know, someone like Michael Bloomberg, who is able to, he's taken on the National Rifle Association in the United States, which is probably one of the largest lobbying firms or organizations in the country of the United States. To really be able to take them on, it says quite a bit. Because the gun lobby is just so powerful in the States. So I do think the U.S. will come back from Trump. We will look back at it as a very unfortunate time in history. But I'm optimistic that the U.S. will bounce back.
Well, we're coming towards the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for being on, Charlotte. It's been great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. I'm very appreciative of the opportunity.
And I'd just like to ask you one final question. As this has been dubbed a Christmas election, we are coming up to Christmas. Aside from winning Whitney, what would you like for Christmas?
Well, I really would like to be able to tackle Okay, for Christmas directly, obviously, I think if we can tackle climate change, the climate emergency that we face, I really want to see people working together. As I said, when I met with the Green Party in Whitney, they had some really great ideas. And I think I would like to see more communities working together, planting more trees. I was very fortunate to plant a few trees myself last weekend. I think if we can plant a few more trees, work together on addressing the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that we're emitting, you know, really reduce that and work together. And I'd like to see more community spirit coming back. I know that's hard. That's a tough wish. But, you know, we've been through some rough times. I do hope that we don't leave the European Union, because part of being in the European Union will help us resolve the climate emergency that we're facing. And, you know, I don't want to sound too much like Miss America when I say world peace. But, you know, I really would just like to see more people getting along and working together and listening. I think that's a Christmas wish would probably be to see more people listen to each other.
Well, I think that's a fantastic Christmas wish, and I'm one that I think myself and all of our listeners would agree to. Thank you once again for coming on
the podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Don't forget that you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or YouTube. You can follow us at Debated Podcast on Twitter. Like us, Debated Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to email us, either about appearing or making a comment or reaction to the episode you've heard, or any other episodes, then email us, thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.